Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. Best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and out every day. Six great flavors of slushies. And the pickle bar, led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Time for the weekend, time to stock up. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Now, after the rousing win, the Yankees garnered momentum and,
Yeah, about that.
No. Didn't go well. Not happy.
The janitor.
Not happy.
No, especially with one Frankie Montas who stinks out loud.
Yeah, but you're the one that jumped up and down like a little kid when they acquired him.
I still wanted Castillo. He was like number three on my list. I was happy they got somebody, but I would have been really ecstatic if they got in Luis Castillo.
Yeah, but Seattle made a deal that included former Spike Andrew Moore.
Yeah, and the Yankees should have been more aggressive for him.
Trying to figure out what's more entertaining on the show. You happy or you in complete panic? Like, angry you is entertaining.
I think the latter there is what I've been told is more entertaining.
You speak for many fans.
I do take great pride in that most of the time.
Well, I didn't say it was good.
No, senor! No, senor! No, senor!
Though is that saying out there, a little knowledge is really dangerous. All right, so. So let's get to Kevin Warren. On HBO at 11 o'clock Tuesday night, he'll be interviewed by Bryant Gumbel for Real Sports on HBO. And in the interview, Warren says he sees the Big Ten having 20 members and paying players. Those paying players are things we have to resolve. We have to. So I want to be a part of this conversation and will be a part of this conversation of what we can do to make this better. By the way, Nicole Auerbach has revised the Big Ten number to better than $8 billion. It sounds like it may be about $8.4 billion. Next is Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State. According to Gene Smith, the Big Ten will no longer schedule conference games more than a year in advance. The Big Ten is also in talks to eliminate divisions and could also consider moving to a 10-game conference schedule.
Great.
Ten-game conference schedule, by the way, would mean that you would, at least here, you'd have to have both of your non-conference games here. You would not be traveling for a non-conference game because you need 7 home games. I'm just saying, those are, when you look at this, there are ways of looking at it. Like, oh, 10 conference games. Well, that also means that you have to schedule your 2 non-conference games here because you need the 7 home games. Penn State, of course, will be on the road again to start this Big Ten season. Now, the original schedules ran through 2025. Okay. On those schedules, Penn State was going to end up with 10 straight openers on the road and 15 of 16 going back to 2010. If you're wondering about Ohio State, same span, believe it or not, more road games than home games. 7 home games, 9 away games. Shockingly, Michigan's 8-8. Really? Like I said, who's doing this?
My almighty!
It is a conference that prides itself on being a part, having members being a part of the AAU, correct? Which means that they believe that the academic component is critical, correct? Which means that the people in the conference have the ability to read. You sit there and go, who does this? Well, the computer. No, you have to have humans sit there and review it. Hey, this isn't right. This isn't working. That's what this comes down to. You've got to have the ability to review the darn thing. Come on. It's just... Now, if you notice, when you go to the Penn State website, notice the 2023 schedule is not there. So it does open the door that there's going to be some sort of maybe rearrangement. We'll see. The non-conference is there. But that's what, okay, according to Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State, who gives a lot of interviews, the Big Ten will no longer schedule conference games more than a year in advance with this TV contract to try to maximize the TV matchup, okay? The Big Ten is also in talks to eliminate divisions. And, now that part we knew, and the Big Ten is also... considering a 10-game conference schedule. And, again, with Kevin Warren, he tells HBO's Real Sports and Brian Gumbel he sees the Big Ten having 20 members and paying players. So there you go. Let's see what they want to do. I have been of the opinion I would like to see them stick with 16, and I think that's workable. And you can play each other often enough to do it. Now at 20, you add another conference game. Then what does that mean for basketball? Do you want to play 21 games? Do you want to play 24 games? 22 games? I don't know. How many games in basketball do you want to play in the conference? Which again leads to more inventory. 10 conference games leads to more inventory. And that's what this is about. It's about inventory. And naturally, people are talking. Now, if they're going to do this, they better hurry up and do it. You better do it before the Pac-10 has a TV deal. Because then you would have, as part of that TV deal, a grant of rights. The grant of rights for Stanford, Oregon, Cal, and Washington, if you want to pick those four schools, all expire on June 30th, 2024, the exact same day as USC and UCLA. There's going to be a TV deal in place for the Pac-10 in less than a year. Any TV deal that the Pac-10 gets will include a grant of rights. And please don't be silly and say, well, you can get out of that. Do you know how much money it takes to get out of grant of rights? In the ACC right now, to get out of the grant of rights, it's nine figures. And these contracts were written to be as airtight as possible. Dennis Dodd is the second guest that we've had in the show that has looked at the grant of rights. And he looked at the Big 12's grant of rights contract. He says, wow, hard to get out of. As I told Dennis, I said, well, I've told people on the show over and over again, if it's so easy to get out, why are Texas and Oklahoma playing in the Big 12 this year? If it's so easy to get out. That tells you it's hard to get out. Well, we actually had some Facebook comments here. We wanted to get that in.
We did. I just got to pull it back up here.
I think I saw it. Let's see. That's a request for another interview.
I got it here. All right, so the first one was from Tom from Arizona. You have a silent confidence about the Nittany Lions this year from what you have seen so far. With having been at PSU training camps for a long time, is what you're seeing this year compared with any other year, perhaps 94-16 especially? Thanks.
Tom, I think every group is unique unto itself. And also, you know, it depends on what other teams are doing. I do like how this team has gone about its business. I do like when I watch the practices that there are moments where the offense wins it and there are moments where the defense wins it. Believe me, Tom, I've been to some training camps where, you know, now obviously you mentioned the 94 team. The offense won over and over and over and over. So you knew the offense was, you're like, okay, they must either be greater, they're not that, or the defense isn't that great. The 94 defense was good but not great. The 94 offense was special. I've also been to some practices, a series of practices, where the offense could do nothing against the defense. I can remember when Rashard Casey was there as quarterback, and I'm watching practices, and they'd do like a 15-play third down deal, and the offense would convert one. You're like, okay, is the defense really that great? Is the offense that bad? So you're trying to see as you go through it, because on every play, there's either a positive for one side and a negative for the other. Okay. On this team, what's been interesting to watch is that the defense wins some and the offense wins some. I find that to be interesting. And that's, to me, that's more what I want to see when I'm watching a team practice, and that's what this team does. The offense wins its fair share, the defense wins its fair share, and they are deep. They are a deep team. They've got a lot of, you know, they, now, you don't want to test that depth. You don't want to test that. There's a reason you don't want to test it, because you want, you know, to me, the next couple of days are really important. If they can get to the next couple of days relatively unscathed, that would be a huge plus for this team. And what's the other one?
The other one comes from Mark. Are there no limits to paying people in any sport at any level?
You mean on the pro side? Are there no limits? Yeah, everybody has limits. For example, when LeBron signed his contract, the $97.4 million, whatever it was, that was the max contract he could get under the NBA Players Association rules. So each one has a basic agreement. And in the NBA, it turns out they have a max. When you have salary caps, oh, you can pay somebody, that person, like say you got a salary cap of $100 million, and I paid that guy $90. Hey, great. Well, I only got $10 million left. So the salary caps keep that part under some level of control. The NBA has a max deal.
Oh, my almighty!
It has a max deal for veterans. And in the NFL, they have very few guaranteed contracts. Baseball, there are no guaranteed contracts. And let's face it, the luxury tax is only a cap that is equivalent to the Maginot line. Because the Dodgers are way beyond that. So is there a limit? And the question, I think maybe what he's looking for is there unlimited money to just pay everybody the way it is? And there's only so much money to go around, and you're right. At some point, there has to be a ceiling. There has to be. You'd think. There are moments where I feel like the suit flirts with it.
F-O-U-L-E-D, that spells fouled up.
All right, back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
All right, we'll talk some college football in a couple different ways. Brett Cece is going to join us to talk about the preview of college football. John Lucas on the cook on the book he wrote about Beano Cook. King in the final half hour. Does Brewers Outlet have cheese?
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by our good friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews, the best selection of beer anywhere. Wine cooler, water, soft drink, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies and the pickle bar. Led by the barrels and the dills. Indeed, second to none. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury. The beverage supermarket. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia. Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. So Tuesday night, before we get to John Lucas here on Beano Cook and the book he wrote, Tuesday night at 11 o'clock on HBO's Real Sports, Kevin Warren will be interviewed by Bryant Gumbel. HBO released this part of the interview about paying college football and basketball players.
I sit here today as the architect of deals that will enrich the Big Ten in ways that no one imagined. Mm-hmm. Everybody's getting rich now off college sports, okay? The networks will get rich from it. The administrators will get rich. The schools will get rich. The coaches will get rich. You know who won't be getting rich? The athletes. When are you going to start paying them?
One of the things I'm excited about is being able to have honest dialogue with our student athletes. Have there been little changes that have been made? Yes. But we need to really sit down and start getting these issues on the table and start making some decisions.
Could you foresee paying your athletes?
Yes. Yeah.
So could you foresee the day when Michigan, Michigan State, Indiana, Wisconsin are paying their football players, paying their basketball players because they are in revenue-producing sports?
Those are the things that we have to resolve. We have to. And I want to be part of this conversation and will be part of this conversation of what we can do to make this better.
That'll be Tuesday night at 11 o'clock on HBO. That's Bryant Gumbel on HBO's Real Sports talking with Kevin Warren. Warren was in California for a Rose Bowl meeting, ironically, with George Kliavkov. And then did Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. That'll be Tuesday at 11. Wide-ranging. Interesting. Okay. And we thank HBO's Real Sports for that clip that we were allowed to use. Okay. Beano Cook. You know, it's interesting because the Pirates, who did win last night, were referred to by Dennis Eckersley as a hodgepodge of nothingness. And when the hostages came back from Iran in 1980 after 444 days in captivity, Major League Baseball gave them lifetime passes, to which Beano Cook said, haven't they suffered enough? Well, that's the name of the book that John Lucas has written. Hello, John. Great to have you with us. Welcome.
I'm doing great, Steve. I tell you what, you got the probably the lead in of the year there. Great segue. All the Pirates to Beano.
Exactly. But that's the way Beano was. Beano would say things. I mean, and there was, would it be safe to say, because I mean, I interviewed and or talked to Beano on many different occasions, and I'll give you one quick example. He did a halftime piece with me at Duquesne, and when we were done, he leaned over to me and says, was that good? He made the trip over from the Bigelow to the arena to do the show. But Beano had no filter.
None at all. None at all. I mean, he just, whatever came to the top of his head, there was no censorship involved. He went with it. And the crazy thing is, it was unscripted. He came up with this stuff. There was no rehearsal. It just, whatever poured out of his mouth, that's the way it was. And that was the beauty of Beano.
Jim Tarman was in charge of sports information at Penn State. Beano Cook was in charge of sports information at Pitt. I've got 1,000 Beano stories just from Jim. And Beano would take his shots at Penn State, even though deep down you and I both know he loved them.
Right. He was, you know, him and Jim, they went back and forth, and there's so much stuff in the book. I mean, we tried to paint a picture of their, you know, it was a rivalry bound in a friendship.
Yes.
Or a friendship bound in a rivalry. It could go both ways. And, you know, we tried to paint a little bit of a picture of that. I could probably have written a whole, you know, separate chapter just on, you know, Beano's stories, you know, with starting out with Jim and then with Bud, and then, you know, moving to Joe and everybody else. I mean, those relationships were very, very important to him. And God, they went back and forth. There were so many fights and, you know, off the air conversations, letters going back and forth, but it always worked it out. They always worked it out, and And I think they were all a close-knit bunch.
When John mentioned Buddy, he was talking about Bud Tallman, by the way, who eventually became Penn State Sports Information Director and was in that spot for 16 years, as a matter of fact.
Right.
So, I mean, look, sports writer Dan Parker out of New York referred to Beano as the greatest publicity man since Barnum. And on second thought, Bailey, too. What was it about the talent of the man to understand how to get the Pitt story out there?
You know what I think, Steve? He was a very unconventional character. And I, you know, you want to emphasize the word character because that's what he really
yes.
was. And there was, you know, he wasn't going to do things conventionally. He did everything outside the box, and he came up with all these different ideas. You know, these guys were, you know, in certain situations, you know, okay, Jim was in State College, you know, you're the only game in town, you know, Center Daily Times, you had the radio there. So before television really got involved, you know, that was a, you know, it was a great situation for Penn State, but Beano, he had the Pirates and Steelers and, you know, things like that. So he had to, you know, he had to get creative, and that's what Beano did. He came up with some crazy releases, throwing all kinds of wild information in there, and you got these people that, you know, that picked it up, and they started paying attention to Pitt, even though Pitt wasn't that good, and, you know, there wasn't really a, you know, a reason to be following them for the on-field product.
Yeah,
Beano's entertainment value really sort of upped the value of their athletic product.
He goes down to Navy Marine Corps Stadium, and they have, you know, listed the great naval battles, Guadalcanal, Iwo Jima, Okinawa. And he looks at it and says, what a schedule. And all on the road.
Right.
That's one of the
great lines. Yeah, he came up with that stuff. But, you know, I guess that's the other part of it. You know, he was not unconventional. He had that background in history.
Yes.
And, you know, he appreciated all these other things. He didn't have just that one track mind when it came to sports or, you know, athletics in general. He was able to fuse all of his different, his likes and hobbies and, you know, reading subjects and things like that, conversation topics, you know, and that helped him do his job and helped him do his job probably in a more different way than anybody else in the country.
Well, he also at one point went to the Miami Dolphins in 1974, where he spent a year doing PR with the Dolphins, public relations. What was that experience like, and how did that shape him moving to TV?
You know what, Steve? He hated every minute of it. He couldn't stand the pro game, the, you know, the competitiveness. It was, you know, everything was life or death, and it was, you know, it wasn't any fun for him. I think that's a recurring subject. You know, if people read the book, it's not all college football. There's, you know, pro football and other stuff in there, too, because he had, you know, a million different experiences, and, you know, career was almost 60 years. But the underlying subject was he searched having fun. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted to have laughs, tell stories, you know, jokes and things like that. And he just, the NFL's, you know, the no fun league, and he just had no, he didn't fit there, and he wanted to get out of it. And so he did his year, and then, you know, went back into PR, and that actually, you know, went to CBS, and then
ABC.
Rude Arledge hired him at ABC.
And then he gets to TV. What was the ESPN experience like for him? Because he really made a national mark there.
Yeah, he really did. If you think about it, and it's hard for people now, especially younger, you know, sports fans, younger college football fans, to realize, you know, this was an era before, obviously before the playoff, all that stuff. You know, game day wasn't even started yet, and ESPN didn't control college football in terms of the media. You know, all the big games, the big bowl games and things weren't on there. That was, you know, it was more of a fly-by-night operation. And Beano, just by the sheer force of his personality as well as his stubbornness and, you know, the way he did things, he got, you know, college game day off the ground. He kept it alive for a couple of years and, you know, really helped them get, you know, rights deals and things like that. And really, you know, he wasn't one of the guys in 79 that you could call a founding father up there in Bristol, but
right.
on the college athletic side of it, he really was. He turned ESPN what it is now. You know, he sort of brought it up there, and that was, I think that's one of his greatest parts of his legacy is what he did there.
Because I feel on the, you know, even though it's not the game day that we see today, they were doing a college football show to lead in. I felt it was his personality that carved a niche out for ESPN in college football. What do you think, John?
I agree with you 100%, Steve. He was the guy that made it. He said his goal was he wants somebody sitting on a lazy boy in Montana to put off, you know, going grocery shopping or cutting the grass, and he wanted them to watch the show, wanted to give them, you know, just a general fan. He didn't want to talk X's and O's. So he did, you know, that unique personality came out. He was kind of Lee Corso before Lee Corso. You know, he dressed up in the mascot outfits and things like that. I remember when I was a little kid, I was about 11 years old when this thing aired. I'll never forget the Penn State West Virginia game one year. I don't know who he convinced up in State College to let him wear the Nittany Lion outfit.
Oh,
and he was, you know, he's running through the woods, yeah, and, you know, he's doing his shtick and everything. And there's the Mountaineer, you know, with the coonskin cap and the muskets chasing him through the woods. And that stuff was just, it was so off the wall and bizarre. People ate it up. They loved it.
But see, he was the one that thought of this stuff. This wasn't a producer thinking of it. He thought of it. And that's, you know, again, his mind. I think what was something that is lost about him is that with all the great lines, he was a deep college football and college sports historian.
Well, definitely, definitely. He was, he loved all the old stuff. He got in, you know, he picked up on trends and things like that, yeah, pretty good. And I think if you read the book, you'll find out he was on target with a lot of his predictions.
Yep.
You know, some of them, who knows, they may come true down the line. But, you know, he was, in terms of the playoff things he saw coming, he had a great, great feel for the game. And it's one of those things that I think it was a two-way love. All the, you know, he loved the sport and the fans. And to be honest, most of the coaches and, you know, administrators and people associated with the game, you know, down to the media as well, they loved him back because they understood that it was a true romance.
This weekend, the Pirates, I believe, are announcing their first ever Hall of Fame class during the Red Series this weekend. And Bill Mazeroski will be one of them. And Beano, of course, the 1960 World Series was memorable for Pittsburgh fans, but it was memorable for him too.
Yeah, he was there. He was in the press box, you know, with a couple hundred other people. It sounds like they were all shoulder to shoulder, and Mazeroski hit that famous home run, and you know, he's rounding the bases. The place just went crazy. It exploded, and Beano had a. He had a famous line. You'll have to read the book to find out, but it echoes a line that a lot of people are familiar with, the movie Caddyshack. And there's, you know, it could be apocryphal if you want to say that. And, you know, I didn't ever think it was true, but yeah, you know, there's a story out there that Rodney Dangerfield, his closing line in Caddyshack, is based on what Beano Cookie yelled in the press box, Game 7, 1960.
Wow, 69 Texas Arkansas game. Now, Penn State's right in the mix of this thing. And, I mean, and this story I got from Joe. He's watching the game. And I think Sue was out. So Joe was watching the kids because Penn State wasn't playing that day because they had moved the game. And somebody from the AP called Joe and they said, you know, are you watching the game? What do you think? And he said, no, I'm babysitting.
Right.
But Beano, Texas, Arkansas, right, was obviously a significant game. In the book, how is it related?
Well, you know, that was Beano's, one of his claim to fames before, you know, he came up with, he was known for his, you know, his one-liners and things like that. He was a publicist in charge of college sports at ABC under Rune Arledge, but he wasn't just a publicist. He had a lot of sort of unwritten part of a job description. He was, you know, informally kind of a right-hand man to Rune, and he came up with some scheduling ideas, and basically these two guys sat down, and they were kind of like a two-man selection committee, you know, like the NCAA Hoops Tournament and, you know, for the BCS. They were trying to pair a one-versus-two matchup, mm-hmm, to try to echo the Notre Dame-Michigan State, you know, the ratings they got for that game in 66.
Yeah.
And things just really worked out. Beano planned out the schedule. He had a feeling that Texas and Arkansas that year, they had a lot of starters back. The schedule lined up. And he told Rune, he said, if you can convince, you know, Darryl Royal and Frank Broyles to move this game from its normal mid-October slot, I think we can have this ratings blockbuster on our hands, set it aside as a national championship game de facto, you know, in early December. And, you know, Beano was right. He rolled the dice on it, and but the two teams ended up undefeated. And obviously Penn State had something to say about, and Joe had something to say about, you know, how that ended up.
Yeah, in fact, now, obviously it was part of the Southern strategy.
Right.
But Bud Wilkinson was part of the group that convinced President Nixon to go to Fayetteville to the game. Did Beano have any role in that at all, or is it just out of good fortune he ended up with it?
No, you know what, Steve? ABC and Beano, they really lucked out. I mean, it was one thing to get one versus two and, you know, have them end up playing like that, you know, that late in the season. But then Nixon decided he was going. And the way Beano, you know, we told the story in the book, it was kind of last minute. And it really, you know, it was obviously a big jolt for them in terms of, you know, ratcheting things up a notch in terms of their preparations from a production standpoint and a publicity standpoint. But it was really last second. They had to scramble, and it turned out that it just, the whole thing just really went off, you know, after that. So it was, you know, it was interesting. Beano got to meet President Nixon. You know, he shook his hands briefly with, as well as Colonel Sanders and Reverend Billy Graham and a whole bunch of other people who were, you know, who were at that game. And it's fascinating to hear, you know, I was gifted, you know, that I got to sit and, you know, lucky to hear these stories firsthand, yeah. Beano speaking into a tape recorder. And, yeah. And I tried to get that same, you know, atmosphere when I put it in the book as two people having a conversation. I think these types of things would really, you know, really hit home how cool they were.
And by the way, just to let everybody know how different the times were, 53 years ago, Richard Nixon sat in the stands.
Right.
At the 50-yard line with the fans. I mean, that's how different it was 53 years ago. Finally,
sure was it.
Yeah,
it wasn't a nice day either. It wasn't a nice day either. It was kind of drizzly and cold and everything else, so give him credit.
Brought him in on a chopper, you know, on Marine One, parked it, walked in. Like, really? That would never happen today. Now, it doesn't mean the president wouldn't be at the game today, but he wouldn't be sitting at the 50-yard line. I can tell you that.
Right, right.
He'd be in a box. Finally, John, this book, which, by the way, you can order this on Amazon. As one of the areas, you can order this on Amazon. And yes, I have read the book because John was kind enough to send me one. So that's how I get around these things. What is it in this book that you learned about him that you did not know before you started writing it?
You know, Steve, that's a really good question. I got to know Beano very, very well, obviously. You know, he was my mentor and, you know, really helped shape my career. And we got to be pretty close. We were very close friends. And then obviously to partner up on this project, it wasn't until later, you know, you think of Beano as this sort of, you know, he was, you know, like a Kramer figure from Seinfeld. You know?
Yes.
I mean, his apartment was a mess. There was all kinds of crazy things going on and, but the guy you saw on television or heard on the radio, that was the exact same person you met in real life. There was no change, you know, at all from him. Plus, you know, the personality was very, very authentic, but he was very, very generous and very compassionate. And he really cared about people. He donated so much. And I'm not just saying, I mean, he gave all his money to Pitt and to Kiski Prep.
Yeah.
You know, that was, you know, his inheritance, whatever you want to call it, that's what he left behind for everyone. But it was, you know, whenever you needed anything, he was just, he was a great friend, a guy who was there, and he was something that, you know, it made me feel bad, you know, after he passed away and I sort of sat on this material for a while, you know, it occurred to me that, you know, if you mention the word Beano Cook to somebody, it doesn't matter what team you're a fan of, you know, they'll probably tell you two things. The Ron Paulus Notre Dame prediction.
Yes, I know. Yeah, I know.
Or the ESPN outtakes, you know, where he was, they had to bleep out every third word and, right. You know, and he's going nuts on camera. And it kind of bothered me because I figured Beano was such a great guy. He needs to be remembered for more than just, those types of things.
Well, I always thought every time I see the outtake thing, the Paulus thing is always, you know, funny. But the outtake thing, every time they show it, I don't laugh at it. Because it's like, okay, after a while, it's overdone and it's unfair. Right. And you're just piling on at that point. And he probably knows more about, exponentially more about college football than the intern that put it together.
Exactly.
In the book, by the way, Beano talks about his greatest teams, players, plays, coaches, fight songs, traditions, and watering holes. All right, so just did I get them all?
Yeah, I think you did. Plus, you know, plus the cheerleaders. He goes into all these other little side topics, which I think makes it, you know, makes it even more of a fascinating read in that regard.
John, it's fabulous. I enjoyed it in part because, you know, I may not have known the man, but I talked to him enough during the course of my career and lifetime. And the book is entitled, Haven't They Suffered Enough? An unbelievable career in sports and PR and television. John, fabulous job on the book. You gave us great insight into the man.
Hey, thank you very much, Steve. I'm really glad you enjoyed it, and thank you so much for having me on and be able to share just a little taste of these stories.
John D. Lucas, who collaborated with Beano Cook, Haven't They Suffered Enough? Boy, I wish he hadn't gone with that title. You want to know why? That was going to be the name of my book when it came to, you know, the suit. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
S-U-I-T, that spells suit, da!
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.